This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. About the last thing a novelist wants to do is answer questions about whether their work is autobiographical. But Lionel Shriver is asking for it in her latest book. Big Brother features a woman who tries to keep her morbidly obese brother from eating himself to death. About 4 years ago, Lionel Shriver wrote an essay on her feelings about her real-life brother, who was indeed dangerously overweight. In fact, he died of cardiac arrest shortly after the essay was published. So, yes, there is that question around her latest book. But Lionel Shriver is a supremely gifted novelist who has shown time and again the ability to transform factual details into meditations on those mysterious forces that shape our lives. She's done it again in Big Brother. Lionel Shriver was born in Gastonia, North Carolina. She's returning to the area. She'll be at Quail Ridge Books and Music tomorrow night for a reading, Flyleaf Books on Thursday. But first, she is with us on The State of Things. Lionel Shriver, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Nice to talk to you.
You do have personal experience with this. Can you tell us about how your brother, about your brother, first of all, and whether he figured into the character of Edison in Big Brother, your latest novel?
Well, sure. I mean, I do appreciate the fact that you realize that novelists are sensitive, that people sometimes just assume you are merely reiterating the details of your personal journal and changing the names. I think there's often confusion on the point of what inspires a novel and then what constitutes the actual plot and characters. I would concede there is some connection between Edison, the character in the book, and my real brother, though he does something completely different for a living. Edison is a jazz pianist. So there's a tentative little connection because my brother was a sound engineer.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a logical extension. One of the reasons that I wanted to write this novel is that I got frustrated that when my brother got much bigger, I could tell that strangers looked at him and all they saw was a fat guy. And that tended to obliterate all the other wonderful things about him and all of his accomplishments. And I think that this is something that happens to people who become obese, that they fill a role in social life. You know, you're the fat person.
Mm.
But you're a great deal more than that. And I am sympathetic with the occluding nature of being overweight.
And this brings us, I think, to this other idea that I talked about in the introduction and that you amplified, which is that the novel becomes much bigger. It becomes about much more. And maybe I can get you to read to expand on that very idea, how it is we come to make types not only of obese people, but ultimately of each of us, the way we look at each other and quickly circumscribe all of us into types and lose some of the humanity. Maybe, can I get you to read for
us?
Sure.
There's a passage that you've suggested that hits on my whole confusion of why it is that we tend to think of ourselves from the inside, and yet we think of other people from the outside, and it doesn't make any sense. Given that most people presumably contend with this rattling disconnect between who they are to themselves and what they are to others, it's perplexing why we're still roundly obsessed with appearance, having verified on our own accounts the feeble link between the who and the what. You'd think that from the age of 3, we'd have learned to look straight through the avatar as we do through a pane of glass. On the other hand, I sometimes suspected that my female employees who were lavishing $50 per week of their modest salaries on makeup had mastered a secret that eluded me most of the time and only intruded when I looked at snapshots. Like it or not, you're a what to other people. You may not recognize your heavy thighs, your cornflower eyes, but they do. And competent interface with the rest of the world involves manipulating that irrelevant, arbitrary, not-you image to the maximum extent. Ergo, if the makeup's application was skillful, that $50 could not have been better spent. Which brings us back to weight. Ever since Edison gave me cause to, I've made a study of this. The hierarchy of apprehensions when laying eyes on another person. Once a form emerges from the distance that is clearly a human and not a lamppost, we now log one gender to size. This order of recognitions may be universal in my part of the world, though I do not believe size has always been number two. Yet these days I am apt to register that a figure is slight or fat, even before I pick up a nanosecond later that they are white, Hispanic, or black. Especially when the subject in question is on the large side, many of us probably detect on the large side, even before determining large person of which sex. Accordingly, in eyewitness testimonies to the police, slim, average build, heavy set, or some more refined variation thereof, features without fail. In fiction, authors who do not immediately identify roughly how much a character weighs are not doing their jobs. And walk-on thumbnails in short stories invariably begin something like, Allison, a tall, skinny girl with freckles, or Bob was an affable, gregarious man whose enjoyment of imported British ales was beginning to announce itself in his waistline.
Lionel Shriver reading from her latest novel, Big Brother. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books and Music tomorrow night at 7:30 with me on The State of Things. And that brings us to another, I think, fascinating aspect that you illuminate in this book. Not only our subjectivity, we know who we are, and then the way we objectify everybody else in that hierarchy that you lay out, but Pandora, who is the sister in this story, who is working on her brother Edison, or for him, sees her role as savior, and suddenly she's reconstituted as somebody whose job it is to save Edison. That becomes her identity. It's a fascinating kind of question that we have. Who are we in relationship to other people, and why does she need to save him?
Well, I'm very interested in this issue of how much we owe our family members, and it's impossible to say, really. And the irony is that the more you give, the more you owe, the more you're into it. And the sister in the novel could just walk away. That's what adult siblings can do if they choose to. But once she starts taking responsibility for her brother, there is seemingly no end to it.
Is she somebody who is beginning to form an identity around her ability to save? If you weren't quite sure, she's in a failing marriage. Things are not going all that well. This is something, some area where she could achieve success. Is that sort of part? It's what was happening for me as I was reading Pandora through the book, and I don't know if any of that was on your mind as you created this character.
Well, part of the idea of Pandora is that she has started what turns out to be a very successful company manufacturing a product that has become a national fad. It's custom-made pull-string dolls for adults. And she enjoys the success at first, but the better the company does, the more she finds the satisfaction elusive. And as she says very near the beginning of the book, she needs a new project. and that's clearly setting you up for her taking on Edison as her next project.
Well, interestingly enough, pull-string dolls that act as proxies so that you can give it to a friend and maybe send a message through this pull-string doll that you might not otherwise be able to deliver yourself, right?
Well, the idea of the product is that you not only send in a photograph so that the doll can wear some of the same clothes as the victim, as it's known at the company, but you send in a script. And it's usually these phrases that people say over and over again, often unwittingly, and that other people, of course, get very tired of.
Right.
For example, you know those people who never stop saying, basically?
Yeah.
Basically this. Basically, you have this problem. And I've noticed that they are not usually aware of it. So you would easily send in a script of a doll whose every phrase begins with basically.
Right.
And that would get the message across that you were sick of it.
But I love the idea that we have these important messages, but somehow we can't find it in our own courage or whatever it would take to stand up and say, you know, you always say that, and actually you're not even thinking when your mouth is open. You know that, don't you?
Well, obviously these dolls are the ultimate in passive aggressive.
Right. Well, so now, and it gets even more interesting. Pandora and Edison are the children of a former television star who is a legend in his own mind, but apparently attempts to, you know, he's regaining his former glory on a program that nobody really seems to think was important as he did.
Well, both Pandora and Edison come from a family where their father was famous in his time, but it was in the 1970s, and it was a television drama that ran for about 8 years called Joint Custody. I came up with a program in which finally you had two parents who were confessedly divorced. In that era, everyone was always a widower or a widower. And I wanted to use this background partly because I thought that it would bring the two siblings together. It would give them an intimate and very particular upbringing that would exclude, for example, Pandora's husband. He really resents that intimacy. I think that's commonplace, by the way, that spouses resent the closeness that they detect between the siblings of their husband or wife.
And we could tell us more about Pandora's husband, because he's really polar opposite of Edison. He is healthy to a fault, right?
Yes, and a pain in the bum. I mean, he's one of those people who's always, you know, every other week he's coming up with a new food group that he will no longer touch. And Fletcher's just as neurotic as Edison about food. He just expresses it in a different manner.
What do you think about a book like Big Brother? Again, you're sort of getting back to what I'm sure many people are going to look at as the central issue here, this kind of question of obesity. It's not central. I don't think it's the central question in the book, but certainly it's a, you should pardon the expression, big topic. You have thought about this, and part of your essay that you wrote that appeared in newspapers, I think certainly The Guardian, and I'm not sure if it appeared elsewhere, sort of took on this question of obese rights. I mean, people being offended at the medicalization of obesity, their idea that, no, leave us alone and stop picking on us. But you said, look, this is in fact a kind of medical question. It is something that we should be talking about.
Well, I think obesity is more than a medical question. I concede that. I am uneasy with the idea that you can be healthy at any size, and that is one of the expressions that's attached to this fat pride movement. I certainly believe it's possible to be healthy and be somewhat overweight. I think you can get to a point where it is unhealthy, and it can't possibly not be. So I differ with them on that point. But the one thing that I do think they have an important contribution to make, and that is there is more than one way to be attractive. It's certainly the case that we have defined beauty these days in a strictly narrow way, in a literally narrow way. You have to be super thin. Yeah. And I think we should contest that. I think it's possible to be sumptuously beautiful as a voluptuous woman, for example. And it's possible to be healthy at a three-dimensional weight. You don't have to be a waif. And I am big on this aspect of the movement. And I also believe that we are constantly confusing the health issue of weight with the aesthetic issue of weight.
Right. Well, and dieting, also a focus of this novel. Dieting seems to be one of the biggest industries these days in this country. And you even start off your book with a quote about the dieting industry and how it's one of the few industries that makes so much money while consistently failing, in a sense. Give us your take on the diet industry here and abroad.
Well, they're making a lot of money off of other people's misery and dissatisfaction with themselves. And, you know, most diets don't work. I wouldn't want to be totally down on the possibility of losing weight if it's important for your health. I think it is possible. But for the most part, the dieting industry is preying on people who are making themselves unhappy on a daily basis, often because of really not that much weight. and they are constantly putting themselves through various paces in order to change the shape of their body, sometimes quite modestly, under the, to me, false understanding that it's going to completely transform their sense of who they are and how people relate to them. We put too much emphasis on size in our own minds. We put too much emphasis on size. We judge ourselves very harshly in terms of our weight. And that's what the dieting industry is capitalizing on.
Your book has a couple of big twists at the end. I will not reveal any of them.
Thank you.
But I want to know if you came to them organically, or did you start at the end? How did you get to those endings?
There's one major twist at the end, which I arrived at in the middle when I was writing the middle of the book, because I was writing toward an ending that made me unhappy, and it was expressly because the ending that I had originally planned on seemed to imply that it was impossible to ever lose weight, and so why bother to try? And I didn't want to write a book that seemed to mean that. It bothered me politically. And I think that the ending as it is written is emotionally deeper than what I first intended, and has a nice complexity to it.
Lionel Shriver, always a pleasure. Welcome back to North Carolina.
Thank you.
Lionel Shriver's latest book, Big Brother. She'll be at Quail Ridge Books and Music tomorrow night at 7:30 for a reading, and at Flyleaf Books on Thursday from noon until 1. For more information about Lionel Shriver's latest book, Big Brother, go to our website, WUNC.org. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things, directed by Alex Granados, produced by Isaac Davey Aronson, Sean Nguyen, and Nicole Campbell. Adija Manley and Mark Haywood are our interns. Robin Copley is the technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.